Welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta Yerdana Azband. Our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf mem bet, page 42. Page 42 opens really from the very top of the page, no exaggeration, with a new Mishnah, which I will read. Hamafkid ma'ot etzel chaveru. So we have a case where one person leaves coins, money, with another person to guard them, to safeguard them. Saran vefshilan la achorav, osh masaram livno ulvito aktanim, ben al bifnehem shalokara ui, chayav. So, what's the case? This shomer, the person guarding or protecting the coins, ostensibly, what does he do? He puts the coins in a cloth, he slings it behind him. I'm thinking like that hobo kerchief on a stick, right? Or he gives them to his son or daughter, who are minors, right? And they're told to watch them. Or he locks the door before them in a way that it says it's not enough, right? Shelo kara'ui, it's not fit. It's not enough lockedness, I guess, right? It's not protective enough to actually secure these coins. And then, you know, then they're gone. If something happens to them, then the shomer is, in fact, obligated to fill in, you know, to give the money that he did not protect. He did not safeguard the coins in the manner of the people who are the shomrim, these guardians. But if he did safeguard that money in the manner that shomrim safeguard, you know, items, then he would be exempt. So, you know, of course, there's, I think, good discussion over what does it mean to safeguard in the manner of the shomrim. But if nothing else, we know that it's going to be a matter of actually protecting things from going astray or being stolen or being lost, whatever. Okay, now the Gemara picks up on what's going on here, this fact that he's not doing it in this proper manner. Bishlama kuhu shaloshi merke derech shomrim. So according to all the other cases, meaning whatever the other cases are that the shomer would have to pay in the circumstances where he doesn't protect the stuff, or in this case money, in the manner that people, that's shomrim, guardians, protectors, would in fact do so. There's a general practice, right? But he's handled them in a way that is not appropriate to protect someone else's money. You sling it over your shoulder in a handkerchief. So maybe that's a joke, but at the end of the day, you haven't protected the coins that were left with you for safekeeping. The Gemara says, but what more is he supposed to do once he's, you know, he's made sure that they're not just being thrown around fully? Amar Rava, Amar Yitzchak, Amar Kra, v'tzar taha kesef biyadcha. So Rava says, or Rav Yitzchak said, that the Torah said, right, that he's quoting a verse from Devarim, chapter 14, verse 25, where the Torah says, v'tzarta ha-kesef biyadcha, you'll bind up the money in your hand, right? Which sounds like, you know, you're doing something. What are you doing here to safeguard the money? Afal pi shetzururin yu biyadcha. The idea is that even though that money is bound up, it's still going to be on you, or on the shomer, on the protector, guardian, to safeguard the money. Meaning, it needs to be in the hand, right, of the person who's actually doing the safeguarding. V'amar Rav Yitzchak, and then Rav Yitzchak comes to say, like, you know, in line with this verse, Le'olam yehei kaspo shel adam matzui biyado, always a person's money should be found in his stuff, amongst his possessions, or in his hand, either way, but I don't think it literally means hand here. Because again, from this same verse, you will bind up the money in your hand. So therefore, your money should be literally at hand. Rav Yitzchak said a person should always divide his money into three. What does that mean, into three? Shlish bekarka, ushlish beprakmatia, ushlish tachet yado. So that a third goes into an investment type of thing, preferably land, right? Real estate. Then the second third should be used for pragmatica, which is basically pragmatics, right? Meaning basic logistical things in life. Perhaps that means business, right? Business dealings. And then the last third he keeps at hand, meaning in his possession. V'amar Rav Yitzchak, ein habracha metuyah, ela b'davar ha'asomui min ha'ayin. Rav Yitzchak says you're only going to find a blessing in a matter when that's concealed from the eye, samui min ha'ayin, that you can't see. Shne'amar, now he brings a verse to prove this. Again, Deuteronomy, Devarim, this time chapter 28. Yitzav Hashem itcha et habracha ba'as mecha, ba'as mecha. Tana the Rebbe Mishmael ain't a bracha mitzuya el b'davar she'ain ayin shalitid ba. So Rabbi Yitzchak says that the blessing is only going to be found on something that's hidden from the eyes, namely like the verse where it says that God will command a blessing with you, right, but onto your storehouses. That's not like an obvious, tangible, miraculous type of blessing. And then the school it says. The school of Rabbi Yishmael says, "Ein bracha mitzuya ela b'davar she'in ha'ayin shaletet ba," namely that which is, the eye doesn't control. Now, I'm not sure what an eye really controls, but the idea being that you're going to find that blessing in a place where it doesn't really matter what it looks like. We have this verse again, "Shne'amar v'yitzav Hashem itcha et bracha ba'asamecha." This is the same verse from before, right? That God will command the blessing with you in your storehouses. So what we have here then is, again, this kind of like, I don't know if it goes so far as full-on negligence, but it's certainly a lackadaisical attitude by the shomer, you know, so that the coins that are left under his safekeeping are gone and he has to provide the value of it, unless he really did handle them in the proper way, which then leads into the verses that support that and a sidestep for those verses, because they also teach this point about blessing and blessing being found primarily, or again, it becomes a matter of dispute for that which is concealed from the eye. The Torah's value of modesty, which is kind of, even here, it's kind of addressed in a very roundabout kind of way, rather than having the discussion about modesty in a direct way. I don't mean modesty like, you know, skirt lengths and sleeve lengths. I mean, like the idea of functioning without arrogance here is, I think, real, right? The idea that something should be hidden from the eye, that you're not really that's how you get blessing, right? Or that's where you're going to find blessing, where other people and you yourself even maybe can't just, you know, flaunt it, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for.
All right, and I think you found the one little piece of Agarata that we have in this whole parak. So kudos to you. All right, what is interesting here is that we've had a lot of Mishnayos, you know, we're really on to Daf Membet already, of Bava Metzia. But now what follows for the rest of this Daf, essentially, is a whole series of cases of, you know, safekeeping of money. I'm going to try to get through a bunch of them. And, you know, so, and they kind of just like share these cases to say like what the halacha was or what was the end result of this. So it begins with the following, right? So a certain man deposited money with another, right? The custodian put it in a hut made of willow branches. Ignuv, the money was stolen from the hut. I'm a Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef said, Avagav de le'inyan ganve nitur tahi. Even though the storing of the money in a hut is considered to be sort of protection from thieves, but in terms of negligence with fire, this is a situation where it began as negligence and ended with an unavoidable mishap. So therefore what? So therefore he is chayav, right? So in other words, so Rav Yosef's point here is that the issue with putting the money in the hut is not so much that it would be stolen. Like he's saying, no, that's a good way to keep it protected and to make sure that it doesn't get stolen. The issue is that you actually have it at risk for fire, right? That if the willows catch on fire, you're going to lose the money. So that's negligence. So yes, because of your negligence, it could have been destroyed by, you know, by fire. It was destroyed by something else. Here it was stolen. So therefore he is chayav because the act of putting it with the willows in this willow hut was actually a form of negligence. Interestingly, the Gemara says an opposite version of what Rav Yosef says. The Ika to Amri and those who say, Afal gav de linyan nura b'shiatu he, even though putting the money in the hut is considered negligence with fire, linyan ganave nitruta he, but it's actually good protection with thieves, utzchilato b'pshia v'sofo b'onas pator. And in a situation that starts with negligence but ends with an unavoidable mishap, right, you should be pator. So the Gemara says, v'hilchata, what should the law be? Tzichilato b'pshia v'sofo b'onas. In a situation that starts with negligence but ends with an unavoidable mishap, chayav. So that they paskin that actually, no, the shomer would be chayav. Then they have another story. Haku gavra da'avki duze gabe chaveri. Right, again, the same situation. A man deposits money with somebody else. Amar le, and then he says to the shomer, havli zuze, give me my money. Amar le, the shomer says to him, lo yadana hecha utminhu. I don't know where I put it. Ata lekame de Rava. The shomer then goes to Rava. Amar le, Rava says him, kol yadana b'shutahi. Whenever a custodian, a shomer says, I don't know, it's considered negligence, right? Because that's part of your job as a shomer. You should know where it is. Zil shalem. And therefore, you have to pay. Another story starts the same way. Hahu gavra to afki zuze gavi chavare, right? Like, again, man leaves money with somebody else, right? Ashli munhu lime, right? The custodian gave it to his mother for her to watch it. V'utnivu bekart lita. And she put it in a chest. V'ignuv. And it gets stolen. Amar Rava. Rava said, hechi nadunu. Dayane lahai dina. How should the judges rule in this case? Nema le ledide zil shalem. If we tell the shomer to go and pay Amar, what could he say? Kol hamavkid, right? Whoever deposits with another, al dad ishto banav hu mavkid, right? Deposits it with the understanding that the shomer may give it over to other people in his household, like his wife or his children. And so in our case, who did the shomer give it to? He gave it to his mother, and it shouldn't be considered negligence. Nema la liime zile shaleme. If we tell his mother to go and pay, because we say she was negligent, right? Because she didn't bury the coins, she put them in this chest. Amar, she can say, lo amar li de lav di de ninu. My son didn't tell me that the coins were not his. De ak renuhu. And then I would have known to bury them. Name alay. If we tell, right? Because in other words, that's the way this should have been stored. If she thought it was her son's coins, maybe she wouldn't have, you know, stored it the way that you should watched money. So if we tell the shomer, amai lo amartla, why didn't you tell your mother? Amar, he could say, kol shekein dechi amina la didei ninu tfei mizdarha bihu, right? Bihu, right? He thinks if I would tell her that they were mine, then she would take even better care of them, right? Because it's the mother's going to take better care of her son's stuff. So what does Rava decide? Ella, amar Rava. Rava says, Mishtaba ihu dahainu zuze ashli munhu liime. The shomer has to swear that he gave the coins to his mother. Umishtaba ime dahainu zuze utminhu bekartlita vignuv. And the mother has to swear that she put the coins in a chest and they were stolen. Upator. And then what? Then the shomer is going to be pator. And it's obvious that the mother is, of course, pator. Then they have another story. Hahu aputropa. Yitame, right? There was an administrator of property that belonged to orphans. Dizabin luhu tura liyitame, who bought an ox for the orphans. Umisare levakra, and he gave it over to a herdsman for safekeeping. Lo habule kache bishine lemechal, right? The ox didn't have molars for teeth to eat. Ume, and then what happened? It died. The ox was missing teeth, and it died of starvation. Couldn't chew its food. Amar Rami Barhama. So Rami Barhama said, Hechi ninhu dine lahai dina. How should judges rule in this case? Namale laapitropa zil shalem. If we tell the administrator, right, the guardian, to go and pay the orphans, Amar, he could say, Ana lavaka masarte, right? I entrusted the ox to the herdsman. It was his responsibility to tell me that the ox wasn't eating. Namale lavakra zil shalem. If we tell the herdsman to pay, Amar, he could say, Ana bahadi ture ukmate. I put the ox together with other ox, ukle shadele, and I threw food to it. Lo habi yadane de lo achal. I didn't know that it wasn't eating. So the Gemara says, Michte, let's see, right? Bakara shomer schar yitamehu. The herdsman is a paid custodian, is working for orphans. Ibai le leyune, right? He should have paid attention. And since he didn't, he should be chayav. So the Gemara says, e ekev seda diyatame, right? If there would have been a loss for the orphans, hachanami, right? Then the herdsman should have to pay. V'hacha b'mayaskinam, but what are we dealing with here? Deleka sveda diyatame. There's no loss to the orphans. Jashkechuhu lamari detura. For they had found out, if they had found the previous owner of the ox, v'shakol yitame zuze mine. Since the sale should have been invalid because the ox didn't have teeth, so they could go to the person who sold them the ox, the orphan really can just get their money back from him. So nobody, the orphans didn't really actually end up losing any money. So then the Gemara says, Elaman katain. So who's the one demanding payment here? Mare detura katain. The owner of the ox wants payment. Why? From the administrator, Ibae le luuduna, because he should have notified me that the animal had no teeth, right? So in other words, the ox is still the property of the owner, of the person who sold the ox, because the sale was invalid. And he can claim, right, why did they let the ox die? Someone should have told him that the ox didn't have teeth. So the Gemara says, My mudin le, right? Why would the administrator have told him, Meida yada de mekach ta'ud have? The owner should have known that it was a mistaken purchase. He should have known that the ox was toothless. So the Gemara says, why is that okay? Sapsira, we're dealing with a middleman. Dizavin mehacha umizavim lahacha, who buys here and sells there on the same day. So the animal was only in his possession for a very short period of time, and he actually may not have known that there weren't any teeth. So what's the bottom line? Hilkach mishtava ihu delo have yata. Therefore, the owner has to swear that he didn't know the ox was toothless. And the herdsman pays the owner the value of the ox's meat, which was sold at a cheaper rate. And then I'll finally just go to the last story that's here. Certain man deposited hops with another. Right? Who had his own pile of hops. Right, and then while pointing to his own pile of hops, the shomer says to his attendant, "Mahai Rami, cast hops from this pile into the beer that you're brewing for me." Remember, hops is to make beer. Also, Rami Mitech, his attendant went and cast hops from the other pile, from the pile that he was watching, not from the shomer's actual pile that he owns. Amar Rav Amram, so Rav says, "Hey Chanidainu de Aine Lahai Dina, how should the judges rule in this case?" Name ale ladide zeal shalem, right? If we tell the shomer to go pay, Amar, he can say, Ana amrile mehai rime. I said to my attendant, take it from my pile, right? I told him he should take it from my hops. Name ale lasarse zeal shalem. If we tell his attendant to pay, Amar, he'll say, lo amar li, the shomer didn't say to me, mehai rime, cast hops from this pile, mehai lo trime, and don't take from that pile, okay? So the Gemara from here is going to go through why this is a more difficult case to find a halacha for, and they're going to give a few answers. And so they say, right? But if the attendant, you know, sort of didn't do it, you know, sort of took some time, right, to bring to the shomer his own hops below atele and did not bring them to him within that time. Gale adate denichale. The shomer showed him that it was acceptable to him that the hops could be taken, right? Because in other words, if he took a little bit of time and he didn't show it to him right away, then basically the shomer basically, you know, just assumed, or it's presumed that he assumed he was taking it from the right hops and he didn't say anything to him. So the Gemara says, bidelo shaha. Right, we're dealing with a case where the attendant didn't take any longer than usual to bring the hops, right? And therefore, the shomer can't be blamed. So then the Gemara says, why Rav Amram again wasn't sure what to rule? So, right, in the end, my svida eka, what loss is there? V'haka mishtarshe lay. Right, the shomer actually gained, right? Because the hops that he was watching, they were put into his beer. So he should just really replace the owner's hops with his own. So the Gemara gives two answers here. Amar Rav Sama Barei de Rabba. So Rav Sama, the son of Rabba, answered, Tahave Shichra Chala. Right? We're dealing with a case where the custodian's beer became vinegar, right? The shomer actually didn't gain any benefit. And so therefore, maybe he doesn't actually have to compensate the owner of the hops he was watching because his beer went bad. Ravashi Amar Bechise, right? So he says that it was the hops were, the watch tops were sort of not good hops and they had thorns and the beer actually didn't brew as well as the Shomer would have liked. And also he lost money. And therefore the Shomer should just pay the owner the value of the thorns. So, you know, so basically the end here is that if the Shomer benefits by any amount, then he would have to pay. But if he didn't benefit, that's kind of, you know, then he just would do a replacement. So I think it's interesting to see all of these different types of cases. And it's sort of showing, you know, the way we have a legal system and there's sort of the law. But then here we're really seeing its application and that there can be questions about its application. It's not, cases are not as straightforward as the law is actually presented.
I'm struck by here, again, we have cases, right? As opposed to just the law. These do not feel hypothetical. Again, they're so specific, although maybe that's playing with the parameters. But Hahu Gavra, that language to me feels like actual events that took place as opposed to what if you have a guy who,
right? Yeah, these are not presented as theoretical. These are actual cases. Also, did you notice like half the words of Chad Gadra are in these cases?
That's where you want to put all your Aramaic in one place. Yes, the connection, the Pesach hints are getting stronger, I feel. Yeah,
there is a bunch here. The Chametz, but also the Zuze, the Tura, the Nura, all these words that we know from the Haggadah. So anyhow, I thought that was kind of fun as well.
Agreed.
That's our DAF discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadra website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.